The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Quick Nations Comic Book Chronicles.
Oh, no one looked at the effects, did they?
No, I did. I just tabbed out.
There we go. I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
Those effects sound so weird. Anyway.
Coming from someone else.
Yeah.
And the man behind the sound effects tonight is at RoddyCat on Twitter.
Sure, why not? Hey, everybody.
And we also have with us tonight at PCN underscore dirt on Twitter.
Hey, come on now. I was expecting.
I do not appreciate that setup behind him right now. You got your action figures.
Got my shelf porn back here. Look at all that.
You got, Hulk hands, Hulk fists.
Right there. Hulk hands. Yeah. And we've got Galaxor and He-Man figures and Lucha Sharks all up here. We got some Transformers. I'm doing this without turning around and looking. I'm trying to do it through the camera.
That's a skill.
Transformers there. We've got some wrestling figures down, some bootleg wrestling figures down there. We got some graphic novels over here. We've got
what's on that screen right there behind you?
The screen right behind me?
Yes.
That is, in fact, the logo for the Pop Culture Network, our new retro logo.
Look at that transition.
Yeah. I'm fun with that retro picture designer thing. That's the best thing in the world. That we use for our year in review episode.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you can go to popculturenetwork.com. And not with us tonight because he has a slight sickness, is at age underscore 70. Hope you feel better, buddy.
He's fighting the forces of VIRUS.
Yes, he is. Yes. So make sure to go to our website, theclicknation.com. You can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and Comic Book Reviews. On the front page, you'll see links to our social media accounts. We're on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Google+,
Instagram.
Make sure to subscribe on YouTube to the show. On YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, TuneIn Radio. Make sure, especially on iTunes, make sure to go and leave us some 5-star reviews. Help us climb up the podcast rankings. If you're a part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network, go to cspn.us. Do it today. Remember, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Go to theclicknation.com/live.
Ish.
Yeah, I was going to say, what time do we do the show? Yeah, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Close enough to 9, give or take.
Well, yes, compared to, say, noon, it is closer to 9.
And while you're on the CSPN website, make sure to go to their shop and buy some Comic Book Chronicles merchandise. That's at shop.cspn.us. So we're back to review this week's comic books, this being the week of January 18th, 2017. And first up, we're going to tackle the Spider-Man event, Dead No More, Clone Conspiracy number 4.
Dun, dun, dun.
There it is.
Tom Dinger, I hear.
It's something.
It's a hum.
So the big reveal last issue, spoiler alert for people, Roddy will find the spoiler alert bell in a second here. Yeah. So the big reveal was that Ben Reilly is back and he is the Jackal. He's the person behind New. He's been making the new clones and resurrecting people in Spider-Man's life. And now he says he can resurrect Uncle Ben. So Dan Slott's probably my favorite Spider-Man writer just because he cares so much about the character. And he has fun writing Peter Parker and his various supporting cast members. Like, just at the beginning of the book, the interplay between Peter and Ben in the van was fun. Like, he writes Ben Reilly as the Jackal, as this sort of sarcastic guy quick-witted, just like Peter, in a more, not so much sadistic way, but just the more sort of devilish way. And we, and then seeing Anna Maria and Dr. Octopus interacting with one another.
That was great. That was the one, that was like the high point of the book for me.
Yeah.
Was this their first time during the course of this?
Yeah, she knows he's back alive now, and like he's all, Anna Maria, my love. And she's like, stay away from me. He's like, you're evil. It, and then, of course, he thinks it's because he's back in his original form, you know, big, pudgy, you know, nerd-looking guy. He's like, if I was in the form of one of these Spider-Man clones, maybe you'd appreciate me more. So there's a little interplay with that, and then
To be fair, she did date him in a form of Peter Parker, so that there could be some truth to that. So,
a little body shaming going on, perhaps. And then the new Electro's in the background with the wisecracks. They make some discovery.
New Electro?
There's a new Electro, a woman.
Okay.
She's a clone, too. Because
what happens to the old Electro? And wasn't there like a whole...
He's dead. He's dead. Because she was dating whoever the original Electro was, and he accidentally killed her with his powers.
Oh, wait. I think I remember seeing that. How do I remember seeing that?
It was a couple years ago, I think.
I'm not sure if it was, because I think, because then his powers like overloaded or something, and he didn't want her near him, but she wanted to be close to him, and zip.
He killed her either way, by accident.
Right. I feel like I remember seeing it, and I don't know why or how.
Right.
Anyway.
So that happened. Anna Maria actually has an idea of how to stop the clones from deteriorating so fast and carrying the carrion disease. Has something to do with the some high frequency sound in the air that they notice. The degeneration doesn't happen as fast when all the clones are inside, like the new U facility, compared to when they're outside. So that gives them something to sort of start a base test with.
So what happens when Claw comes along?
Well, you have to have the right frequency, not just any frequency.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Claw can hit pretty much any frequency, so I'm pretty sure he could find it, even if he's still around, now that I think about it.
I also like how Peter Parker made a good point to Ben, saying, you know, he brought all these people back to life, but he hasn't brought back Uncle Ben yet. And, you know, there's a reason for that. You know, he keeps threatening that he can bring Ben back, but if he was really going to bring him back, he would have did it already. He didn't hesitate to bring back, the Lizard's family, as you see there on the front cover, and Gwen Stacy and Captain Stacy and so forth, so on. So,
very good point. My big problem with this issue just happened to come towards the end with the way Ben Reilly just suddenly turns evil, apparently, for no reason whatsoever.
Right.
And it's just kind of out of the blue. The one thing that popped into my mind was if you watch something like A View to a Kill and you see Christopher walking and he's getting ready to leave his hideout and he just grabs a machine gun and starts killing everybody down there and laughing like crazy just because he's psycho and he wants to kill a bunch of people. And that's what this feels like. It's like for absolutely no reason, he's just going to self-destruct everything. Oh, that might be a spoiler. Yeah, that was probably a spoiler, but you know, oh well. Life moves on. But the turn just seemed to come for no reason out of nowhere, and it just... I was reading it, and I think I actually said out loud, like, what? You know? It didn't seem to fit. It just didn't make any sense. But I don't know if there's some greater reveal coming in the next one that this is actually, you know, secretly I've got mega clones that are going to come out or something, or, you know, whatever the deal is. But it just seemed like it didn't fit what has been going on in the story so far.
Yeah. It just came out sort of, he spun into evil mode very quickly there.
It's like we got one issue left. Quick!
It's not Ben Reilly. It's Norman Osborn.
Yeah. How long is this event anyway?
Let me see if there's anything for Clone Conspiracy 6.
More likely a 6-issue series, like everything else nowadays.
Huh. Oh, it is 6. So there's 2 issues left.
So next week's or next month or whatever is the penultimate issue. How do you say it?
Yes, one of those.
Yeah.
But yeah. I'm enjoying the Spider-Man event. I want to see how they resolve all this to where Ben Reilly spins off into a Scarlet Spider series.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, it's one of those things like standoff where it starts out strong, but I'm just kind of afraid where it's going to end up.
And it's obvious, like, Uncle Ben isn't going to be resurrected, so.
But he was in the promotional materials. He has to be.
Yeah, but he hasn't been in any promotional materials after the fact. Like, they've already hyped what's coming after this with, like.
Are you telling me that Marvel may have false advertised a crossover event to the comic book public?
Possibly, no. That can't happen.
You might have a good time with the news this week, by the way. our retailer friend on the show here. Mm-hmm. Actually, you probably don't even care about this. What happened to all the news lists that come out next week?
They should be out by now. Usually.
For April, I guess. I heard DC's pushed theirs back to next week for some strange reason.
I mean, that's happened. Marvel's done that before, but usually it's like between the 15th and the 15th.
It's late in the month for it to be coming out.
I mean, like I said, Marvel did that at one time. It was like the 20s.
I heard DC first pushed theirs back from Monday to Tuesday because of the MLK holiday, which made sense. Then they decided just not to do them this week and just wait till next week. So then I was like waiting for Marvel's to come out like Tuesday or Wednesday. It usually comes out at noon on a Tuesday or Wednesday, and that didn't happen. But like,
no, I think they came out because
DC has released their solicits through various websites, which you can compile together and see what's all coming out, but there wasn't the big...
Actually, they may have just come out today.
I'm not seeing... Well, the only DC... I see DC's come out today. That's the only one I have seen. Although...
It's April 2017, right?
Right. Yes. I'm seeing Fantagraphics one from, like, December, and those are the only ones I've seen. You know, those are the only ones I see so far, at least as far as Newsarama's got.
Because there's the Watchmen rebirth thing going on with Captain Atom,
and there's a couple of heroes. Yeah, and there's some solicits for a couple of free comic book space stuff.
Yeah, you can find the solicits.
Yeah, maybe those are just leaks.
They're all like compiled on different sites. Like, you know, so and so site gets the Justice League solicits, and
right.
Another site gets the Batman family of titles solicits. They did all that, and usually it leads to the big. Here's the big. Page where you just go through to read all the comics for that month, but that hasn't happened yet. I don't know.
I'm looking right now through.
DC is the only one I see
through a retailer news. I'm trying to see.
That's usually why you see all those announcements of like the all new Guardians of the Galaxy and all new Defenders. That usually right. Those little leaks usually lead up to the full solicits for that month. But I guess Defenders actually comes out. In June, but nevertheless.
I don't know, because normally, because if I had seen them, I would have put them in the thing, but I didn't. Like, I looked at
them a week ago
and didn't see them, so, yeah.
Now to get Doug off of looking at solicits and to transition over to
I'm still looking, like, no, yeah.
Amazing Spider-Man 23.
Yeah, all right. Fine. Amazing Spider-Man 23, a clone conspiracy tie-in. It's not great. I'm done.
What?
Okay, then. that was sufficient. I mean, that was...
What more do you people want from me? This is the standard of quality I set on the show.
What made it not good?
I don't know.
Does this take place at the same time as Clone Conspiracy number 4?
Yeah. It's happening at the same time. So it's basically, you read Clone Conspiracy 4... If you open this book, it says, make sure you read Clone Conspiracy 4 first. So you go and you read Clone Conspiracy 4, and then you come back and you read this book, and it's happening at the same time, and it basically starts at the same place and ends at the same place. It just gives you different stuff in the middle. It follows Gwen Stacy and her dad around in the little idyllic town while the stuff is going on, but you see it like overlap with the same stuff that's happening during Clone Conspiracy. So it doesn't really move the story forward. It just shows you what's going on at the same time with some of the other characters.
So, Secret Wars tie-in. Got it.
Yeah.
I will say I have enjoyed the Amazing Spider-Man tie-ins for this. I haven't read, like, I haven't kept up with Prowler or Silk. I think are the only other tie-in books that I can think of right now, at least.
Yeah, this is the first Amazing Spider-Man I've read, really, in this book.
This is the first Amazing Spider-Man since Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah, pretty much.
Actually, I want to say about the same here. Actually.
I would say, I remember Doug was a big fan of Superior.
I love that.
Yeah, I did too, actually.
Flushed it down the toilet. Time for the movie. For that great, great Amazing Spider-Man 2 movie.
Yep.
Oh.
All right.
But, I mean, overall, I mean, generally speaking, it does, the one thing it has in its favor is that the artwork was done in a style where it looks like kind of that 60s, 70s style. John Romita.
You create a new artist.
Frank Romita, right. Down at the deli. He was telling me. John Romita. It has that kind of classic, Spider-Man look to it. So it kind of fits having this Gwen Stacy story. Captain Stacy there, it has that old look to it, which is kind of neat just for that aspect of it. But overall, you can probably skip it, and it's not going to make any difference whatsoever to Clone Conspiracy because it is literally just what happens to them while the main stuff is going on in the main book.
Just out of curiosity, I don't even know why I'm asking this, but did they resurrect Jean DeWolf?
They don't mention it in this one, but I think they mentioned it in Clone Conspiracy 3. I think they name dropped her in she was in the background of one of the panels or something. But yeah,
okay, because that seems to be about everybody with the exception of Jonah Sen. Wait, is he still? I don't. It doesn't matter. Anyway,
I think he's alive, isn't he?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
He very well could have been dead, and then Secret Wars happened, and then they're just like, oh, yeah, no, he's not dead,
Maybe. I don't know.
They can do that because of Secret Wars.
True.
So, anyway, yeah, it's all right.
Cool. I guess while we're on to things that aren't good.
Oh, jeez.
Brilliant.
Monsters Unleashed number one.
I think that deserves a...
And I actually won't say that it's bad. I'll just say it wasn't for me. Because actually, I mean, the comic is fine. The art, Steve McNiven.
It's Cullen Bunn.
Right, Cullen Bunn. It's fine. I just don't care about the series itself. Monster.
Yeah.
I don't care about monsters in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. A couple weeks ago, Marvel released a sampler preview that was for Monsters Unleashed that showed some pages from the book, and it showed a bunch of the tie-ins, and I kind of flipped through it, and I'm like, nah, this isn't really for me, but, this might be the type of thing my son, would like to read, because he likes to read a lot of these big event, crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. So I gave him the sampler book, and he read through it, and I go, so, is there anything in there you're interested in? He's like, meh, no. I was like, oh, uh-oh. That's not a good sign.
Yeah, that's kind of telling.
So you saw a physical, I'm assuming, since both of you frequent comic book shops today or the last 2 days. Is this like a larger than normal book, or is it just a regular sized?
I didn't even pick it up when I went in. So,
I saw a review copy had the front page of it was like wider than normal. So I was wondering if it was like a magazine sized book or something.
Oh, you mean like physical size wise?
Yes.
No, it's the same size as a regular comic. I think it may have more pages to it. I think there might have been.
How much did this thing go for? Like $4.99?
Yeah, actually, I was just wondering that myself. I'm looking it up here in the database.
Okay.
That
would be my guess, which would be a nerve as well.
Right, yeah.
I wouldn't pick it up.
Wait, the bigger question is, and I had a thing for it, what is this running through? Like, is it going to run into any books, or is it just going to be all by itself?
And it's its own series, but
a point one.
Yeah, there's point one issues you can read of, like, Champions, what was it? M.U.
Yeah, it's .mu instead of .mu instead of .1. Yeah,
gotcha. Okay,
they did that once before with another tie-in. I forget what it was.
Yeah, Age of Ultron. I believe they did that with.
Yeah, where they did the .au. Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm not reading those either, by the way.
What the point? Those Yeah. I might not
read the rest of this series.
This was 40 pages at $4.99.
Oh, okay. So it was extra pages. Actually, it didn't feel like it was. Maybe the physical has more stuff to look at. I was going to say the review copy didn't seem like it took that long for me to read.
I don't think it was written very much for the idea of explaining a lot of plot. I think it was more about showing giant monsters smashing things.
I remember what else I have an issue with.
It wouldn't be a bad thing.
Which, this is more a scheduling thing and not a fault of the series. Like, Civil War just ended, last month? A month and a half ago?
A month, I don't think.
December,
oh,
right?
It was
December 28th or something like that. It ended.
Like the end of the month. Yeah,
not even a full month.
Yeah, less than a month ago. And there's no breather period before monsters start attacking. And like everyone you see on this cover right here was fighting each other less than a month ago.
Well, except Tony Stark.
Yeah.
We're assuming that's Ironheart on the cover there in the left-hand corner.
Right. I'm assuming that's not Tony Stark. Although I like how it's turned away from the viewer, so you know, when you saw this a couple months ago, you had no idea that that wouldn't be him in there, you know?
Right.
But so it's like, nice, it nice has bright yellow butt cheeks cut out of the back.
So it's like, so so number one, that, you know, that's kind of awkward, even though, you know, he was, they should fight together against evil anyway. Hmm. So that's going on. IVX, or Inhumans versus X-Men's, also taking place.
Yep.
Some of these people should have beefs with one another.
Well, I don't know. I guess a couple of the books may have hashed a little bit of that. At least one that I remember reading kind of hashed.
I guess it would help if I read the tie-ins to IVX, maybe, but meh.
Would it?
Is that really a good idea?
Yeah. unless it's a book I'm already reading. Like, I'm reading Uncanny Inhumans, even though that tie-in came out this week and I haven't read it yet. I will read it.
Yeah.
But like All New X-Men and Uncanny X-Men, I haven't really kept up with anymore.
Actually, I bought, let's see, what did I buy? I bought the Uncanny X-Men and the Extraordinary X-Men tie-ins for IVX. I haven't read them yet. I mean, they came out like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, whatever. And I went ahead and grabbed them, and they've just been sitting here. I'm like, I'll get to them eventually. Like, maybe before the next issue comes out, I might read them, you know? But
yeah, I was reading Extraordinary X-Men, so maybe I'll check out that and... I stopped reading Uncanny, but I'm kind of curious the last two tie-ins that came out, so I'll probably check those out. But anyway, back to Monsters Unleashed. We're not fans.
I have no interest. None.
And it was announced, it may be in the news later, but it's going to spin off into its own ongoing series from Bun and artist that Agent 70 and Doug both enjoyed, David Baldion? From Web Warriors.
Oh, okay. The guy who did, Web Warriors. Cool. Yeah. Probably won't read it, but.
Oh, he also didn't know before that. Me and Doug were fans of that run.
I mean, if they were to say, look, we've got this writer that you like, this artist that you like, we're going to do this Monsters book, and it's going to be 4 issues. Then I go, maybe I'll try it. For 4 issues, I'll give it a shot. But when they go, hey, we're doing a new ongoing series with American Kaiju and Fing Fang Foom. I'm gonna have hard pass on that one.
I don't even know if they're gonna be in the series because it's gonna. They mentioned the monsters, the new monsters they created are gonna be a part of the new series. And the kid that, if you read it, there's a kid in this book. It kind of looks like he has controls. He has control over monsters. I guess I should actually talk about this book a little bit. There's this kid that you see throughout the book. He's at home with his mom. They're listening to the news reports of these monsters attacking all across the globe. So basically the book is a bunch of, here's monsters attacking in this country, and here's this group of heroes that happen to be there to help. So we see the new Avengers team, with Hercules and whatnot, taking on some monsters here. We jump to the champions in another country, find some monsters. We see the Extraordinary X-Men in their country. We see the Inhumans in another country. And woven in between that is a kid at home with his mom watching the news. You know, he's kind of playfully arguing with his mom, but he's sitting at a desk sketching. And it looks like he's sketching the monsters. So I don't know whether he sketches them and they come to life, or he sketches them and can control them. And he's a kid kaiju is what they're calling them. And he's going to be the star of that, or the lead of the Monsters Unleashed series with Elsa Bloodstone, who was also in this book. She's doing some stuff in the background as well, investigating the apocalypse, as she calls it.
The monster apocalypse.
Yeah, the monster apocalypse.
I guess for me, one of the main problems, and this popped in my mind while you were giving that synopsis, is that that synopsis actually sounds like it could be okay. Like, if this kid is drawing monsters and monsters come to life and start attacking, like, that might be interesting. And I could see that being an interesting hook for a series about a kid that, you know, he's fighting evil, whatever, and he draws these monsters that come to life and attack, and then they go away. Like, there could be some fun with that. But when I see a title like this, what it makes me think of is that Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is one of the worst puns, A. And B, I like the real Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D., and so every time I see a book that's like Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D., I'm like, yes! And then I look, and it's like a werewolf and a Frankenstein. I'm like, oh, damn it.
Yeah.
So when I see this monsters, thing, I'm just thinking, like, oh, I don't like this pseudo-horror Marvel 70s wannabe, Dracula's going to make an appearance, and Werewolf by Night will make an appearance, and you know, it's just like, ugh, like this is not the corner of the Marvel Universe I want to spend some time in.
This kind of gives credence to my longstanding theory that they're bringing all this stuff up to kind of keep those licenses afloat.
Yeah,
that ties in something else I was just thinking. For one, I guess one thought before I get to that is maybe it's just the writer in me. I don't have that big of a I guess I'm not that big of a daydreamer where I can't, in my mind, I can't think of how you can launch a series based on these Marvel monsters and have it last that long. Like, what can you do with it?
Because the writer of me can spin some shit out if you really, really want it. It ain't going to be
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Maybe it's great. It's a weakness in me, perhaps. Yeah. And number two, in Bunn's interview with Marvel, talking about the series and how, you know, he uses all the, you know, the buzzwords of, you know, these monsters are going to have this lasting impression in the Marvel Universe, and we're setting things up that are going to play out farther down the line, yada, yada, yada. Every time I hear these lines, it immediately makes me start thinking of how the comics are trying to set this stuff up to be in the Marvel Cinematic Universe down the line.
Mm.
Maybe. Like, are they trying to set these monsters up where in phase six or whatever, you start seeing Fing Fang Foom flying through the city's, you know, New York skyline, and they start...
If you go to the logical conclusion of that, with the classic monsters having their quote unquote shared universe coming at whatever point that they plan on doing that, that could be a counter.
Yeah.
Which I don't like this. I don't like that either. So.
Yeah, but again, that's how I start thinking about these things.
You know, we could have had a new next wave. That's all I'm saying. As opposed to this.
Instead, you got just Elsa.
Well, I mean, yeah, everybody's still around, so they could still do it. But...
All right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
We've written on that enough.
We just spent like 20 minutes on this book.
I know, right? For the one that only one of us read.
It was fertile discussion, Father.
Sure.
Good talk.
Sure. Good hustle. Speaking of discussion talk, I am over in the YouTube chat, because apparently we have had people in YouTube chat in the past that we have seen. I don't think it's.
I always see it like after the fact.
Yeah, like somebody because I think a friend of mine, Kat, was telling me that she and I remember it was she and Matt Wang and somebody else was in the chat and they were trying to ask us something and we didn't see it because we didn't see it. So
yeah, keep if you can keep that chat.
Oh yeah, I got it. Yeah, I got the thing up.
We don't talk to the plebs.
In case people decide to chime in, it was at one point it was a way for us to see a chat.
That's what I thought, and
Google Plus though, so. Anyway, let's jump to DC stuff. Get off Marvel's back for a minute.
Oh, we'll be back.
Yes, we will. So before the show, I read Superman number 15.
Yeah.
Yep. I'll say at first, I was frustrated when I got to whatever page the credit page was, and I saw like four different artists listed on it. I was like, oh, come on, already?
Because then it feels like a fill-in.
Yeah. It feels like I'm in World's End, and it's like the credits page is filled with like 20 people. But there's a reason for it. So Superman is with the whatever, we're not calling them the Legends of Tomorrow. It's like the League of
people
from Dead Earths traveling around.
I can't think of what they're called, but yeah.
Yeah, I can't either.
Not League of Superheroes.
League of Protectors or something? No.
It's very much like Secret Wars-y stuff, or pre-Secret Wars, where the Illuminati was encountering people. I guess it was like Squadron Supreme or Squadron Sinister, whatever the name it was, where it was the collection of people from Dead Earths.
Right. They were from, what was it? Multiplicity, I think is what, was that what it was called? Multiversity.
Yes, Multiversity, yeah.
Yeah, with Grant Morrison. He did a very confusing miniseries that set up this team. And then.
Okay, so it's the same team from that?
Yeah, the DC Universe promptly forgot about him.
Oh, okay. No, because they show up here.
So well, until now, yeah.
They're just waiting. He seeded it 2 years ago, or however long it was.
Well, it's always one of those things where it's like, this is the most important book in the history of the DC universe, and then 6 months later it's canceled and no one ever talks about it again, you know?
Right. How do we know if it actually will be? But anyway, so Superman of pre-New 52, now Superman of DC Rebirth era, teams up with these guys to go rescue/recruit Superman from across the multiverse before they can be captured by, I forget whoever the threat is that's going around scooping up Superman.
Well, you don't know who he is. You just know that he's out there.
Don't they call the guy we saw him at the end, right? It was some dude.
Yeah, you see him, but I don't. Did they ever name him?
It's not him, but the whatever his lackeys from the last issue.
Well, we see the guy like not the last page, but the page before. You can see him, standing on, I guess it's like the deck of a ship as it's approaching the universe or whatever. As he's coming to attack and eat the Superman. But yeah, I don't know that he's ever actually been named. I can't think of if he's got a name. I don't remember what it is. But yeah, so he's been going around and basically siphoning the powers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Out of the supermen of the different universes. So like on this cover, for instance, you see him holding that rabbit. That's actually Captain Carrot, who was in a 20-issue limited series in the 80s and then came back for a 3-issue maxi series a couple of years ago. But he's in a universe where all the people are animals. And so Captain Carrot actually did a crossover with Superman in the 80s. But his powers have been siphoned away, and he's turned back into a regular rabbit He's back to being a normal animal instead of having superpowers. So,
can he still talk? Or
nope, he's just a rabbit.
Just a rabbit. Okay.
Yep. So anyway, this guy is like sucking the energy out of the Supermen, but they're like these little. He's got a list of the Supermen he's trying to get, and there are these little clues or something that's going to lead somewhere. Because, like, for instance, he came to the Rebirth universe, but he only wants the new Superman, the guy in China, not Kal-El. So we don't know why. Is it because Kal-El's from a different universe and he didn't know that, Kal-El was here? That Superman is the new one? Or is there something else? So there's some sort of mystery that's woven into it. And you get, like, these little clues that there's something more going on than just, hey, I'm eating Superman powers. But he is focused on those characters. And so we see him going through the multiverse, kidnapping these different Supermen and holding them until it's time to siphon off their powers. So this issue is them collecting the Supermen from all these different universes. And I love multiverse stories. I love, the parallel universes. And I love when they do these types of books because eventually there's always some big crowd scene where you've got, 20, 30 guys all standing around and you can look through and be like, oh, that's a Superman from Batman Beyond. And like, oh, that Superman's like Martian Manhunter in the Superman role. And oh, look, here's this alternate universe that has Bloodwind from the 1990s Justice League series in here. And, for me, it's fun to go through all those parallel Earths and see all that different stuff happening in the background.
That is a strangely Spider-Versian plot just described.
That's also a reason why I really liked the Web Warriors series, because it dealt with a lot of the same type stuff. Except, Captain Carrot is probably the DC equivalent to Spider-Ham. And so with him being gone, it loses some points right there.
I have a... not a mystery question, but I'm not sure how to phrase it. But does this character even appear in the comic?
Which character?
Carrot.
Oh, Captain Carrot?
Yes.
He was at the end of the last issue. I don't think he's actually in this one.
Yes. I know he was in the last issue, but is he in this issue?
No, he's not in this one because he was in the evil guy's place. And they haven't.
Oh, he had him. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they just now met the evil guy who's coming to eat Superman's powers. So yeah, we haven't seen Captain Carrot powerless yet, but we saw his powers get ripped away at the end of the last issue.
Okay.
Or did we? Dun dun dun.
So it was fun seeing the different Earths as they go. The issue started off with the Justice League of Assassins.
Yeah, they're all the Punisher.
Yeah, I'd never seen that before, but okay. So then that's where the different artists jump in. Like we see Clay Mann draw a page or two of some different. A different Earth, and then we see the great and awesome Jorge Jimenez do like four different Earths. Well, one of them was Earth 12, which I remember now is the Batman Beyond universe, because we see them meet up with the Justice League of the Future, mm-hmm. or the television cartoon series.
Yeah, and you even see Batman Beyond standing there.
Yep. And then there were some other Earths. One where Superman, I guess, is the president. There's one with Etrigan, the demon. I think that was a Clay Mann drawn story. He's a Superman.
Although I really like this one, this Earth 18. I'm looking at the book now. Earth 18 is Superman's a Minotaur. He's like just a big muscular dude with a Minotaur head on.
Oh yeah, that was weird.
So it's some sort of Greek Roman god world. I thought that was a pretty neat thing.
There was actually another book that they had a varying Superman in the book. Weirdly enough, though, none of those people you just said showed up. So that's interesting.
So curious to see where this multiplicity art goes.
But see, this is the type of stuff I love. This is, I mean, what got me into comics when I was in the sixth grade was I discovered Crisis on Infinite Earths. And when I discovered that story, I mean, that was, I had read some comics here and there over the years, but Crisis was the story that got me into it. So every time I see one of these, you know, parallel Earths, multiverse type stories, it always gets me excited because that's the type of stuff I love.
And that's what used to confuse me and aggravate me about DC Comics was all their different Earths and whatnot. But now I'm kind of embracing it because, like, the comparison, like, I, from Marvel, I always enjoyed the alternate futures, you know, especially with the X-Men, you know, Days of Future Past, and now they're just going future crazy with all the different, bringing characters from the past to the, or the future to the present, or the past to the present. Yeah, so I'm like, it's just the same thing with DC, except with just different Earths, so.
Yeah, that was one of the things I really liked with all the stuff Hickman was doing leading up to Secret War.
Secret War, yeah.
Yeah, no less. Secret Wars was a different one. But anyway, that's one thing that I really liked about it, though, is that they kept doing all those different universes. That's one thing I liked about Squadron Supreme when it, you know, launched in the Marvel Universe, because I always love multiple universes and the different takes on the characters. So that to me is part of the fun of comics.
Yeah. Comics.
All right.
Justice League versus Suicide Squad number 5. I like that, I guess, for one, this has been a weekly event series, and next week it's over.
Yeah, it's not overstaying its welcome.
Yes, but I'm enjoying it, maybe because it's been coming out so rapid fire that the story is sticking in my head, and well, there's progress week from week.
And also, like, it's one of those stories where so much happens in it that you feel like this should be like the big crossover event. Like this should be like the 3 month, 4 month event that ties into every Superman and every Batman. And like, cause they always do that. And especially in this issue, because this issue opens with the Justice League under control of Eclipso, who's under the control of Max Lord. The Justice League takes over the world. And so
they solve all the world's problems.
Yeah, so in like two or three pages, it's just the Justice League takes over everything. And I'm reading this going, oh, this must be a hallucination that Maxwell Lord is having. Like, he must be dreaming. This is how he would take over the world. And you flip the page, and it's like, nope, the story keeps going. Nope, the story keeps going. Like, he actually did this. Like, this happened. And so it's in one hand, it's kind of fun when they do a story like that, where it's like the whole Earth is under their control. But on the other hand, it's like this isn't happening in other books. Like, it's happening in Suicide Squad, Justice League, and that's it. You know? Hmm. It's not happening in Flash. It's not happening in Green Lantern.
It's not even happening in Justice League, is it?
Well, yeah, it is, kind of. Justice League is all of the side stories. So, like, Maxwell Lord's background.
Really?
Yeah.
Do I need to read Justice League now?
Yeah, actually, here, I'll tell you what. Well, here, let's talk about this book, and then we'll talk about Justice League.
All right.
Surprised he didn't change their name to the Justice Lords.
Oh, that's good.
That's been done, right?
Yeah. Would have been perfect.
Give him time.
Yeah.
So that's going on with Matt's. He has Amanda Waller, I guess, prisoner, kind of, even though he's kind of ranting and raving to her, or bragging more. She's trying to tell him that he can't contain the power of this, that diamond, which we find out later on is tied to Eclipso. Another thing, DC has all these villains who I get confused with one another. Eclipso, Starro.
Well, Starro has starfish that attach to people's faces and take control. Eclipso has a jewel that draws an eclipse on your face and then he takes control. It's completely different.
Ah. Mongol and Darkseid, two big guys that are strong.
Yeah, but Mongol controls the war planet Warworld, and Darkseid controls the war planet of Apocalypse. It's completely different. Completely different.
Okay.
Well, actually, let me see. Mongol's not doing that at this point.
Well, that's what he's known for.
Sinestro took over Warworld.
Right.
That's right. I'm glad that you're actually confirming that it's not just something crazy I thought of in my head. But back to this. So like I said, that stuff's going on with Maxwell Lord and Amanda Waller. I will say that I didn't know that was Eclipso. That was the you know, half shade face. So when I saw him at the end, I was like, oh, Eclipso. Okay. That makes sense. Batman's back with the back at Bell Rev with the Suicide Squad, basically just like in the Marvel Universe, anyone can be an Avenger, anyone can be a Justice League member. So he's recruits them to be Justice League.
You can see how this is setting up for Justice League of America. The new series is spinning out of this. When I saw the lineup for Justice League America, I was like, wait a minute, Lobo and Killer Frost? Yeah. Like, this doesn't make any sense.
It only made sense if the Ray and the Atom and Vitson show up in the next week's issue. But if not, it's like, it's okay, so Batman recruits Killer Frost and Lobo, but that's only two people from this series. Black Canary also.
It sounds weird considering wasn't like Captain Cold and Luther on the team like fairly recently?
On Justice League, yeah.
And then Captain Cold just kind of went away and never appeared in the Dark Side War or anything, but no one talks about that.
Well, he was working for Lex Luthor as a bodyguard for a while.
And then that just kind of went away.
Lex Luthor's sister betrayed him, which you can read in the current Superwoman series.
And so then
Captain Cold disappeared when Lana, or is it Lana Luthor?
I think it is.
Lana, when she took over, became the evil mastermind of the Luthor Empire.
Okay.
So anyway.
But it was kind of cool seeing Batman interact with the Suicide Squad folks from Maynard.
Although, they didn't call them the Outsiders. Like, I thought it was Batman and the Outsiders, right?
Right.
No, there's no Q rating for the Outsiders.
Well, except for the guy, Red Hood and Outsiders, though.
Outlaws.
Outlaws, okay, well, never mind then.
But, like, that's where Katana came from. Katana came from Batman and the Outsiders.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't know that.
See, you got to go back and read every DC book that came out in the 80s, because you're going to find a lot of your history there.
I'll get right on that.
But, yeah, I'm, like, this story is, it's, I, this is the story I wish was going on in the current Justice League story. Like, I wish this wasn't a crossover thing. I wish this was the regular monthly Justice League book, because this has the same big over-the-top feel like we were getting before in Justice League with Darkseid War and some of that stuff. This is what this feels like.
This could have just been a straight crossover between both books, Justice League and Suicide Squad.
Yeah, they could have just gone back and forth between the two books. It would have taken them 2 months instead of 1 month, you know, but they could have just gone back and forth.
Are both double shipping?
I know Justice League is. I'm not sure.
Suicide Squad is a double shipping.
Okay, well, then there you go. They could have done they could have done 8 issues. They could have made an 8-issue crossover event using the two books for 2 months, and that would have been fine. But I like it. It's a big story. It has lots of characters. Lots of big stuff happens. You can feel, like, with the Emerald Empress, you know, she's from the Legion of Superheroes in the future. She's stuck in our time. So, like, they gave some stuff to her, and then she ran off. So she can reappear wherever in her storyline. You know, they have, you know, characters like that doing their little things. Lobo reappears so that he can be back in the DC universe. So, and then they can build up for the new Justice League of America. So they're doing lots of stuff in here that makes the story feel even bigger than what it is, because you can see this other stuff rolling out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Which again is why I wish this was what Justice League was like every month instead of what it normally is.
A lot of seeding of things to come, but not at the detriment of the story.
Right. It's like you're getting keystones for stuff happening in the DC universe with a good, fun, action-packed story to go with it.
I also like that they're
crown jewel of the DC universe, you're saying?
It could be, yes.
I also like how they're introducing so many new characters for, I guess, rebirthed characters, like Maxwell Lord. I don't believe he had shown up in the New 52. I might be wrong.
I want to say he did at some point, and it was only for like a couple issues somewhere.
But the good thing about it, Rebirth is like, yeah, just forget all that.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. This is better. We're doing it better now anyway, so.
Yeah, and Lobo doesn't even talk about the other Lobo that killed him and was running around as Lobo for a while. Like, it's not even mentioned. It's not even a thing. It's like, yeah, here's the guy from the 90s you all remember. Let's just go with that.
Wait a minute. So this is where I'm getting confused, because I read last week, Suicide Squad, after the show last week, and it was a tie-in. It showed Suicide Squad, I forget what number it was, from last week or 2 weeks ago, showed the original Suicide Squad's first mission and what went wrong with it and why Amanda Waller buried him underneath a cell or however she hit him away.
Suicide Squad 9, I think it is.
Yeah, 9. But either in that issue or issue was, maybe it might have been this issue, there was one issue that showed this you know, the current, they tried to remake Lobo into like the little slimmer, more handsomer, suave looking guy that Cullen Bunn was riding. Y'all remember him?
Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah, there was a, in some comic I just read, there was a, they showed that, actually it was Green Lanterns, that's what it was. Okay. Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. I was getting caught up on that. And for those who don't know, I guess Doug might know, what's this, the Orange Lantern, Larfleeze, is working with the Brainiac cyborg construct or something to help him. He's basically become like the collector of the DC universe. He's collecting universes and whatnot.
I'm looking through my stack here of Hal Jordan's. I think I'm 2 issues back on it.
Yeah, I read the last 2 issues to get caught up like over the last couple of days. And on one of those, he has a miniaturized world that has the Green Lantern Corps stuck on it currently. Of course, stuff happens. They break free, and they're inside Larf Fleece's collection, and they're like busting all these containers with aliens and different worlds stuck on them. And then one of the containers is that Lobo from that series. And like they go to bust the container, and I forget which Green Lantern stops them. They're like, "No, don't do it. You don't want to let him out," or something like that. It's like a slight inside joke. And I thought that was kind of cool. It's nice. Like, oh, okay, he's still there, but we just kind of like put him to the side. So you might like that when you get to that part.
Yeah, I've liked Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. I thought it's been a pretty solid series.
Me too. I'm like, wow, this is great.
Yeah, when it first came out, I was like, I don't know that I really want to, trying to recapture the glory of Green Lantern past. It's been, some of these books have been hit and miss the last few years, but I think after issue 5 or issue 6, one of those, I think it was you talking about it, and I was like, I probably need to catch up on that. So I went back and got them so I can read through them, and I've enjoyed it. It's a solid series.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about Venditti's Green Lantern stuff prior to Rebirth. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't never get into it. See, there was always a little mini event every 4 months or something, but yeah, he's killing it on this series. All right, so tell us about the Justice League Suicide Squad tie-in, Justice League 13.
Okay. So in this tie-in, it's the story of Steve Trevor. So if you remember, Steve Trevor was basically Wonder Woman's boyfriend, for lack of a better term, in the early days of the New 52 when she first came to the new world, and she's learning to be Wonder Woman, and she's, dealing with the UN and whatever. And so he was the guy who was brought in to be kind of like the go-between between the United States government and the Amazons. And so he worked side by side with her. And so they had a thing that went on for a while until they realized they wanted Wonder Woman to date Superman in the DC universe. So then they had to, make it fizzle out so they could redo that. So this story is really about him in Washington, in his office, working with the super high-tech people that are tracking everything around the world, and the Eclipso attack happens. And they see in a matter of minutes how Superman takes over the White House, how Flash dismantles all the bombs, how the Green Lantern set up the shield around Earth to protect everything, for Wonder Woman to go to the UN and, hold control over all the people in the UN. So he suddenly has to realize, he realizes that he's got to do something. He's got to break out and somehow stop this from happening. If he can get to Wonder Woman, he thinks maybe he can make a change, whatever. He's got to save his sister and her kids from being attacked by the Eclipso monsters. And it turns into kind of like a zombie story where the Eclipso virus, if you will, keeps infecting people as he's trying to make his escape. So everyone's turning into one of these monsters as he's trying to get back home. And he gets home and finds that his family has become infected. And he has to fight against the infection. And Eclipso actually singles him out and says, what fun is it to infect everybody? Because then there's no victims to play with. And so it gives you some insight into Eclipso and how the whole Eclipso powers work, how it, infects people, and what it's like to live in this world while everything's going on in Justice League versus Suicide Squad. Kind of in the same, what we were talking about earlier with Amazing Spider-Man and Clone Conspiracy. This is what's happening at the same time as we see the other stuff going on in the main book. So it's, for Justice League, it doesn't have that grand, big story going on. And to me, that's a detriment to the series, because this should be like the flagship book that's leading the DC universe, because it is all of their big characters together under one roof. And instead it's been doing these smaller stories. Steve Trevor, it makes sense because he was in a lot of the early Justice League stories, because he was working side by side with Wonder Woman in a lot of that stuff in the New 52. But it just, it doesn't, the only real appearance that these, that the actual Justice League makes is as the Eclipso versions of themselves doing their stuff around the world as he's getting the news reports in. And at one point he does see Wonder Woman flying through the air, but you know, she's infected and it's obviously not going to stop to help him or anything like that. So, like it's, you know, you can say it's an interesting side chapter, so you can see what it's like in the world while this is going on, but it's really not a key component of the story. And it's definitely not, you know, an important enough part of the book that if you're reading the crossover, it's like, oh, I have to go get that so I can see, you know, what's happening in the rest of the world. It's just not, it's not an important story. It's not a big story. It's interesting, but it's not fantastic. So, and that's kind of been the problem with Justice League this whole time with Rebirth.
Yep.
So kids, buy Justice League versus Suicide Squad. It's cool. You can take some time off Justice League for a while.
It ends next week.
No.
Let's see. Let's
well, I got one real quick.
Okay.
Since we're still on the DC tip. Trinity, number 5.
Another good series.
Yeah, totally. I do love that secondary the secondary cover that I guess Manipal did. Like if you have the digital cover, I mean, if you have the digital copy, you can see the...
This one?
That one, yep.
This one?
It's pretty nice. So we finally get some, you know, I shouldn't say that. That's not nice, but there's no other way to say it, but we finally get some plot development here.
Yeah. I was going to say, I actually know what's going on now. So they plainly stated what's happening.
Right. So this was the exposition, issue. We know now why Poison Ivy is doing what she's doing, but we also see why Mongold is doing what he's doing. And he apparently has a dream child or a child or could be a possibly third party that's, you know, maybe doing something we don't know, but regardless, we know why they're involved with the story and what they're doing there. And apparently Mongol has a, even in his dream state or whatever that place is, he has a real bad fixation with Superman.
I was gonna say, I love that image of him and all the different bodies from all the different mm-hmm. realities of Superman, like the animated Superman has a dead body laying there, you exactly. know? There's some fun stuff to dig through.
Mm-hmm. So I was like, and which is what I alluded to earlier with the other Superman coming through. But yeah, that was it. And at the end of the, like I said, it was mostly a exposition thing, but like I said, we got the reason why things are doing that. But at the end of the issue, we also see, I guess somebody or breaking through to one side, and I guess we'll see what happens with that next issue, since the plan did actually go into fruition, or seem to anyway. So, to continue to like this book,
and it's very nice when he does the art. He being Manipal,
yeah,
because the pages just look awesome. I tweeted out before after reading it that it'd be nice if we could just replace the current writer on Justice League and give Manipul the Justice League book.
Or you just come over here and you just get the core group.
Yeah, but I feel like the better story should be in Justice League.
Well, we don't know where it's going.
Flash. I like having a Flash mixed in there. I wish Hal Jordan was back on Earth. I like having him, you know, in the mix. I like having Aquaman you know, show up from time to time so he has a reason to exist, you know.
Kind of have a super friends thing going on.
Yeah, exactly.
But overall, good.
Yeah. That was something I was going to ask about, actually. This Black Mercy thing.
I don't know where that came from.
Okay. Because I thought it was like a plant that they was held in, but I don't think that was it either, because they alluded to, you know, Mongol being stuck in that. So,
another issue. You're talking about it being like some sort of dream state, some sort of like alternate reality thing. But Poison Ivy said she tapped into it through the green.
Right, and that was another thing. I was like, wait, so she's Swamp Thing now?
Well, you know.
I mean, like Swamp Thing, which makes sense. I mean, given, you know.
Her plant powers, yeah.
Right.
But yeah, that was something else that stood out to me, too, because I when I was reading it, so I'm like, okay, so is this like a pocket dimension? Is this, because for a long time, you just think it's a dream. Obviously, it's a dream. It's just in someone's head while they're going through it. But then, no, it's like there's... If you can get to it through the green, then it's not a dream. It's something else entirely. Right. So I don't know if this creature, this dream child.
Yeah, I suspect that kid is a little bit more than what she is or it makes out to be.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out if it's another old character from the DC universe that they've like reimagined some backdoor to bring this character in, but I'm just trying to figure out who it could be. And I don't know if it's. So I was reading something online. I don't buy into this at all. But someone was speculating that it's to bring in the Sandman characters.
Huh. Dream, okay.
Death, and despair. And like, no, I don't think so.
I mean, that's about as plausible as anything.
I mean, considering they're doing it with the Watchmen, I guess right. There's you could say there's a precedent there, but that just seems a little too far out there.
I mean, I don't know too much about characters, but I know
I meant to mention something when we were talking about Justice League versus Suicide Squad earlier when Doug was mentioning how we were talking about how they're seeding things to play out, you know, further down the line. You mentioned Emerald Empress.
Mm-hmm.
He's solicited to show up in Supergirl. She's either showing up in one of the Supergirl or Green Lanterns. I forget which one.
Mm. Well, because she mentions that she has to find Saturn Girl. Saturn Girl was another character from the Legion of Superheroes. She actually appeared in the Batman issue at the first part of the I Am Suicide story when he's going through Arkham Asylum. Putting together his team of the crazies to go with him, she's actually in one of the cells in Arkham Asylum.
Yep.
So, I mean, they're definitely, you know, peppering this stuff throughout the DC universe. So if you're, you know, reading a bunch of different books, you're seeing all these different threads, which is neat.
I like continuity.
Yeah.
Even if I'm not reading all the books.
And even, like, they mentioned in this issue, I think it was this issue, where they mentioned Poison Ivy's last miniseries, Circle of Life and Death.
Yep.
Which, you know, if you read that series, it wasn't anything too spectacular. You know, it was fine, but it didn't seem like anything all that special. But the fact that they would reference that miniseries just goes to show that they're going that extra mile to kind of keep things all tied together and just kind of remind everybody that it is a connected universe, even if the pieces don't always seem to fit quite exactly.
Right, and it would give credence to why she would care about being in this book now, doing what she's doing.
Right, caring about life.
Right.
Instead of just trying to steal diamonds from the Gotham City Bank. All right. What else we read?
Let's see.
For DC, for me.
I guess I can finish it off with the Justice League of America, The Ray Rebirth, number one.
Tell us all about The Ray, Tim.
I enjoyed it.
Everything. I remember, skipping anything.
I remember when... I'm ignoring you. I remember when The Ray first debuted. Actually, it might not even be a first debut, but I remember hearing about the Reagan comic book series as a kid, and I was like, oh, this is, you know, he's like a big, bright, nightlight-looking guy. That's about all I knew about him. I didn't realize he had this connection to, was it, Golden Age heroes and whatnot, but we don't see any of that here. We just get his origin of he's a kid locked in his house with his mother for years on years on years. His mother tells him he has a disease or, you know, he can't be in the sunlight. He has like a disease. We find out that one of his friends, Caden, I think his name is, came over to play one time, and I forget what exactly Caden was playing with, sparklers or something like that that was making light. And then you start to see like little cracks in Ray's skin in his face, and then he kind of like does his little exploding thing, and then he never sees Caden again. He doesn't know Caden. He knows Caden got hurt from him, but he doesn't know if he's seriously hurt or if he died whenever they took him to the hospital. Eventually, over time, he gets tired of being, you know, secluded in the house. So he escapes. At this point, he's a teenager. He finds some other teenagers in town. Once again, his powers go crazy. Except this time, he becomes translucent, where he appears to be invisible. I guess that's a part of his bending light powers. And he doesn't go back home after this. He just starts traveling the world. He ends up in the city of Vanity, Oregon, I think they call it. And he sees that there's a guy running for mayor named Caden, who just happens to be his childhood friend. And he's going to speak at this rally or whatnot. Caden's talking about how, you know, people need to rise up. You know, he's giving you know, make you feel good type speech to the crowd. And you notice he has like a bad eye, which he, I guess, lost sight in one of his eyes from the accident, but he's not letting that keep him down, yada, yada, yada. There's a some terrorist guy tries to attack because he feels like Kaden's taking over the town and bringing all these hippies into town. A lot of rabble, rabble, rabble. DeRay intervenes, saves Kaden, decides he's going to go off and live his life. And, you know, he's inspired by the words from Kaden. So, of course, it ends with, you know, DeRay will appear next month in Justice League of America number one. But I like the art from Stephen Byrne here is very great. Oh, and I see Steve Orlando, I guess, co-wrote it with Jody Houser. I didn't realize she helped out on the issue as well. But I'm curious to see how, so in this Justice League team, he'll be the young guy who isn't used to being out in society. So I'm sure there'll be some stuff with that to play off.
Well, because I was just going to say, this version of the Ray was originally created, it was one of the Joe Quesada created characters when he was at DC before he went over to Marvel. And then the full Ray series that followed after the Quesada miniseries was written by Christopher Priest back when he was still James Owsley. So, yeah, I remember reading all those back when they came out. And then he was on Justice League for a while. And he was in one of those other – oh, man, what were the – I can't think of what the team was. One of those terrible team, like Team Extreme, Justice League Extreme, whatever it was. You know, one of those 90s, because everything was extreme in the 90s, you know. It was radical. He was in part of that too. But yeah, he's a character that's been around for a long time. He was Golden Age before that. They had a version of him that was in the that team with Uncle Sam. Freedom Fighters, that's it. Oh, okay. You know what? That makes me wonder. Was he in that Superman? Because they went to that world in this latest issue of Superman. Is there a Ray in there? I'm going to pull that.
No.
I'm going to pull that back out and check.
So,
Matt Wayne just said something about Justice League Task Force.
Oh, Task Force. That's what it was. Which was a terrible series also. But anyway. oh, I don't see the Ray in this book. There are a couple characters in silhouette in the background, so you can't really see who they are. So. He very well might be. There might be a version of him on Earth 10 as well, but not. He's not spotted in Superman 15. All right. Anyway, I was hoping, man. I was hoping that would be cool if it was.
So we have to wait till the end of the episode to see if DeRay continues this 2-week streak of me picking, or actually, I guess 1 week, but 2 weeks condensed of choosing Justice League of America Rebirth issues for my clicks of the week.
Oh, this is your click?
You have to wait till the end. Well, the end of this segment.
To see. Oh, I see. That's what you're saying. I gotcha.
Okay, will the Ray continue to shine, is what you're saying?
Yes.
All right. What else do we have?
Let's see. Let's jump back to Marvel, I guess, for a minute. Invincible Iron Man number 3.
Yay. Wait. Yay, I guess.
You know, this is pretty good.
Yeah. No, it was actually. It actually was.
For a Bendis book, I feel like a lot happened.
Yes. Yeah. And it was actually, there was actually a couple of moments that had me, well, that happens every now and then with the Bendis book, but that was actually quite joyful, or actually at least, you know, made me laugh.
Yeah.
In the book, that was actually pretty cool. I'm not saying that Bendis can't do that, but, you know.
There was some good character acting moments from Stefano Caselli on art.
Yeah.
Especially at the end between Riri Williams, Hologram Tony Stark.
Yeah, and I was thinking about that part. Yeah, when he was thinking about a name.
What's her face? Pepper Potts.
Mm-hmm.
When he was between the three of them or the two of them.
Yeah,
and, like, looking back at the panels kept changing, but you know, he'd look at one person, look at the other person.
Yeah.
And then a lot of Riri's facial expressions as she was getting annoyed with her AI Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a lot of this was a big character driven issue.
Yeah, it was kind of fun. And it was also, it was kind of weird also, because, like, you know, AI Tony Stark was basically holding a therapy session for her, and she's not trying to have it. But you just see them panel for panel just doing stuff. Like, they're just fighting folks, and even going through the Avengers movie.
That was like a big panel. That was like a busy day.
Yeah, I'm sitting there like, wow, she just gets an armor already. She's just busting stuff up.
Yeah, she finds Chitauri and big monsters and whatever else was happening. I feel like one of the monsters wasn't one of them. Monsters was an unleashed monster.
Oh, the one that she said it was gross. It might have been, yeah, or it was an alien. I'm not sure.
And Rhino, and even though Rhino should be busy in Clone's Conspiracy, but we won't.
That's what I'm saying. Like she just upgrades Rhino and then goes off to this other thing, and then, you know, looks at her and Miles has a panel and just You know, just running all over the place. I'm like, geez.
So yeah, there that happened. So yeah, all in all. Oh, and I like the tease for next issue. Like the villain appeared in the previous. Well, actually, it was either previous volume of Invincible Iron Man.
Yeah, because I think it was.
I can't remember if that or if it was international.
Yeah, no, it was a previous arc because I remember reading that. It was the beginning of the Invincible. Cool. And spoiler alert, we find out who, I don't know if this is that big a thing, but apparently there was an article about it. But she finally settles on the name, which we already know what it is, but she finally officiates that, finally gets official. And two, we find out who's running Stark Industries, which I just met this character in this mystery because I knew that was going on, but I didn't know. I hadn't read any
question that no one. Yeah, the question that no one was asking: who's running Stark
Industries? Exactly, because you figure it's like Mary Jane is there, and Friday's pretty much actually running it, which she technically still is. But you know, somebody has been named as the CEO. So, I'm like, okay, and which, by the way, I'm like, okay, I like her. just from a couple of panels that I saw
her.
Yeah. So yeah, like I said, this was a nice issue, and a good issue, and I didn't think I was gonna say that too much about a Fiend's book, but actually I shouldn't say that because there's been a couple of Guardian issues I liked, so I shouldn't say that.
What else we got?
We didn't talk about Spider-Gwen already, did we not? Or maybe that was off channel.
It was off, so let's talk about it now.
Alright, Spider-Gwen number 16. This is part two of
Sitting in a Tree.
What's that?
Sitting in a Tree.
Yes.
K-I-S-S-I-N-G.
Yep, except for all they got to is hugging on this one. Which I'm assuming they're saving all that big whatever. I mean, they already done it, but they're saving whatever that's going to be for Miles's book. I don't know.
The heavy makeout. Are we going to get a heavy makeout book?
Yeah, that's what it seems like. So Bendis can do whatever he was planning to do with that. But we got Miles still over in Earth 65 with Gwen. They have a little bonding session because of their dads being key to them being them. In a way, because he's over there trying to find his dad, and she's having issues with issues with her dad, but her dad's kind of done some stuff to us, and that actually plays off in his because we get Matt Murdock showing up, who's pretty much controlling Gwen and apparently giving her. And I told her I'm like two issues behind on Spider-Gwen, so I wasn't sure. I mean, I knew what was going up that I knew about the path that he was she was under his thumb, but I didn't know to what extent. But then we get some Spider-Woman tie-in with this because apparently a lot of stuff has been stolen from 616 through the same means that was going on, in that event. So that was an interesting time. Like, okay. And I was joking about that when Miles's issue came out, what was it, last week or week before last, whatever it was, and I was like, okay, that was a Spider-Woman tie-in, but it actually is, because like we see a bunch of stuff, and her and Miles has to go undercover to see what's going on, because apparently Matt Murdock's, has them doing some tasks for him, and we, at the end of the issue, we think we find Miles' dad, not sure.
Oh yeah, that's what started this whole thing.
Right. The other thing was, the other thing that was kind of weird to me was, so they meet up with Matt Murdock, makes an appearance, kind of comes of that Earth. He knows who Miles is, and Miles knows who he. I mean, obviously, because I guess, well, in 616, everybody knows who Matt Murdock is, I guess, still, or some people don't. I don't know. Did he go back secret again? That changes every other year, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I think he's secret. He's secret again. Yeah.
Okay, but Miles knows. Apparently, Miles knows who he is, and that this Earth's Miles. I mean, this Earth's Matt Murdock knows who Miles Morales is, some kind of way, which I thought was strange.
Yeah, I thought I had something for a minute there to explain it, but then I realized I don't.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here like, okay, the only other way that could happen is like maybe it was something out of Spider-Woman, but I can't see how that could have been unless there was some sort of Spider-Verse tie-in to where. But I don't even think that character was even introduced. Well, maybe it was. Maybe it was, because I think he has been, during Spider-Gwen's run, he's kind of been around for a second, so that might not be true. I don't know, that was just weird part to me. I'm like, wait, how do you even know that? You know, like, they're just nonchalantly talking to each other, like, okay, well, I know who you are, and they're from two different Earths. And I was thinking, well, maybe there's another Miles Morales on this Earth that has similar powers in Matt Murdock, because Matt Murdock of this Earth is basically the Kingpin, so I guess he has his way. I don't know. It's really weird. But outside of that, that's pretty much all we got. Because it's going to be continued in Miles' next issue, and I don't know how long this is going to go on.
Yeah, I don't usually read this. I do read the Miles Morales Spider-Man book. So because of the crossover, of course, picked it up just to follow the story. The story I thought was fine. I mean, he's got to find his dad, whatever. They're just doing one of those type stories, but the thing was, the thing that stuck out to me was, I don't know that that's really his dad.
Right.
Or that's him on the version of him on that universe.
Right. That's what I'm thinking.
Right. Yeah. And maybe his dad took his place, or maybe this is the evil version of him, whatever. But I kind of got the feeling like there's something more going on than just like, hey, I found this crazy thing that opens a portal to another dimension. I got lost, but as someone who's not a regular reader of Spider-Gwen, I kind of had a tough time with the art in some of the places. It is a very stylized look, and some people love it, and that's great, but for me,
we had talked about this off.
We were talking about this channel. In Hangouts, just in chat.
Yeah,
and it's like if someone likes it, great. I'm not saying it's like the worst. Like, how dare you like this artwork? That's terrible. But as someone who's not a regular reader of the book, going from the artwork in Spider-Man to the artwork in this book, it's like a 2x4 to the face. Like, it is such a completely different style.
Right. And like I may not have said then, but then I probably should have. But yeah, I will definitely say that it is an art style that is pretty, I guess, striking to anybody who's not seen it before. So,
it's very,
definitely put somebody off.
Yeah, it's very loose, very sketchy.
Yeah.
It's not a high level of detail. It's more about the action. And I can see, in a sense, there's almost an anime influence in the way that it exaggerates some of the anatomy and the facial expressions from time to time in order to tell the story. I get what's going on, but it's just like such a shock to the system. The other thing is, this world, this Earth 65, whatever it is, it's a completely different type of world.
Right.
In what we have here. So,
and that's kind of what made it for me, because it's like, well, clearly, since it is a different type of Earth, the art style would be, somewhat different.
Yeah, and then, like, the city glows with color,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, whenever you see something like New York, you might see pockets of color, but it's just kind of like this general, kind of like this murky, stinky, smoky, kind of nasty grime that hangs over the city. Whereas in Spider-Gwen's world, it's, reds and blues and yellows and, stuff all over the place. So it has a completely different feel to it. So it's fun, but it's just a very distinct change.
Yeah, totally. I can see that.
All right.
We missed Batman 15 from DC.
We tried to miss it.
You weren't a fan? Bad,
huh? Okay. It's the team from Sheriff of Babylon. So you would think that this would be like my favorite book in the history of the world. I actually hated just about everything in this book.
You weren't a fan of the love story?
This is so Days of Our Lives. Like, it is.
Batman gets played and.
Yeah, and they do like this gratuitous shot of them like naked, wrapped in the cape on the rooftop. And it's just like, oh my gosh, come on. I'm kind of like looking at this thing. I'm like looking around, like the kids aren't looking over my shoulder or anything, are they? Like, what is, like, I'm not trying to buy one of these books. What is this?
Batman gets played very easily.
And yeah, the Catwoman sets him up. Oh, and Catwoman like jumps off the roof of a building and he like screams like, no, cat. He's calling her cat. He just keeps calling her cat. And he just screams like cat. And he jumps off the roof and he can't find her. It's like, how is she suddenly so much better at this than he is? You know what I mean? It's just like, come on. I hated the dialogue. I hated the story, the whole fake mystery thing. The fact that Batman is just, he's played for a fool really in the whole thing. If this story is only to set up him hardening his heart against her later on, so she comes back for something later on and he's just like, psh, whatever, back of my hand and be done with you, then maybe I could see it having a point for being there. But I'm just reading this thing like, this is why I don't watch the CW shows. It's like for this exact type of stuff. Like I ugh. So like it really pained me for the fact that we had one of my favorite creative teams doing this storyline, and it's just a story I absolutely... The one thing I will give credit for, though, is in the artwork, Catwoman and Batman are telling a story about how they first met, and they're actually telling stories from different eras of DC Comics history. And so Mitch Gerards actually draws the artwork differently, either in a 50s style or a 70s style, depending on whose point of view it is telling the story. So the artwork completely changes. The coloring changes. The inking changes. Even though it's the same guy doing all the artwork throughout the book, it looks like, you know, you would have had fill-in guest artists coming and doing these panels because it looks completely different. And that was kind of cool. So I'll give him credit for that. I mean, that I thought was a really neat idea, and they pulled that off really well. But, you know, that was the one thing that I'll give credit to in the entire book.
Business picks up in 2 weeks, though.
It better.
I am Bane.
Ugh. So for a book from those two that came out this week, it is not my click of the week.
I guess we can rapid fire.
Sure. I think so. Yeah. Everything else I got can be blown through, kinda.
Let's see. How was Aquaman number 15?
It was good, actually. It finished off the storyline. The story's actually been building since the first issue. Here we are in issue 15. It finally seems to play out, where it looks like it may finally be wrapped up. Basically, Black Manta has taken control of this secret terrorist organization determined to rule the world. You may have heard that before in the crown jewel of the Hasbro universe, but... basically, this secret terrorist group has attacked the United States, but made it look like they were Atlantis. And then they attacked Atlantis and made it look like it was the United States. So the United States and Atlantis went to war. And so Aquaman has to basically stop it, you know, defuse the situation, figure out what's going on, and, you know, bring everyone together. And so this issue is actually broken into two parts. The first part is him actually fighting Black Manta. Actually going to where Black Manta is and having the big final, you know, villain boss fight thing that happens. But then the other part of the issue is he actually goes to the White House, you know, basically busts through the door, throws his trident down on the table, and he's like, listen, this is what's going on, and you're going to pay attention, and here's the proof I have of it, and I'm going to throw the ball in your court by pulling off some crazy political moves because I am a king as well as being a warrior, and so I'm going to throw all this stuff at you, and now the ball's in your court. It's up to you. Do you want to continue to go to war, or are we going to make peace out of this whole situation? And he plays it very well. So it was a great wrap-up of the story. Everything, like, if you want to read this storyline, because it's really good, it's a Dan Abnett storyline, go back all the way to Aquaman 1 and read it, because it's worth it. It all plays out in one big storyline that all comes to a head in this issue. It was a lot of fun. It was really good.
Maybe I'll go back and read the Volume 1 that's out now, or...
Yeah, the first trade they put out, which is, I think it's Rebirth, the Rebirth Special, and then 1-5, I think.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Maybe.
Yeah, but it's been fun.
You've been hyping it up, so it's got me curious.
Yeah, and the artwork has always been solid in this book.
I think I'd read it more if it was Brad Walker doing more of the single issues instead of just the covers, because I like his art.
Yeah. But the artwork on the inside's good, too.
Yeah.
Come on, Tim. Right. Check it out. Check it out, Tim. Come on, Tim. Check it out. Come on, Tim. Do you really read so much? Come on, Tim. You have all that free time to read 15 books this weekend. Go ahead, do it.
So much to do. I believe Doug and myself also read WWE number 1.
Yeah. I wonder when y'all are going to get to that. I'm going to go to sleep.
You're underwater.
You're underwater, by the way.
Good.
It's a perfect time for you to take care of that.
I meant they used the same cover as the Then, Now, and Forever.
Well, but that was only in the regular book. If you got the... Now cover, you got the New Day. If you got the Then cover, then you got Scott Hall. If you got the Forever, you got Macho Man Randy Savage. Or, this is the one I got, the action figure variant. There was also the blank variant. They also had the Royal Rumble connecting cover. I think the first six or eight issues come together in one big cover. Or they had the fold-out WWE Universal Championship foil cover. So you had plenty of choices, Tim. You didn't just have to settle for that first cover.
Blah.
Derek, do you have a bunch of those stickers of the belt?
Here, let me.
I know they were giving those out at the shops.
You mean these stickers?
Yep.
I was like, there's a whole bundle of these. I think we can have a couple of these disappear. That'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. So SmackDown can't get any love?
That'll be next. That'll be the next one. Next promotion they do.
Oh, okay. So if you're a fan of wrestling, you'll enjoy this because it actually was good.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the weird thing about it is that it is doing what no other wrestling comic has done before. It's not setting out to tell like these new original stories. Like I remember the WCW book was like, all the wrestlers are on a boat, like for a cruise, you know, on this cruise ship and a fight breaks out, you know, and whatever. This is not doing that. Instead, this is set during the storylines that actually happen in, you know, wrestling. I don't know if you guys are aware of this. I'm gonna hip you to a little secret here, is that the real draw is not so much the wrestling, but the storylines that go on between the matches. So
the soap opera.
How dare you?
Right, like it's not true.
But so the whole storyline, like here on the cover, we see the Shield, basically a Triple H. The whole storyline was you had a team of three guys who all worked together. One guy turned his back on the team, betrayed them, and became champion. So what they've done is they've gone back to when this happened, like last year. Was it last year? WrestleMania 30?
More or less. Mm-hmm. It was two WrestleManias ago, right?
Was WrestleMania 32 last year?
The numbers, I don't know. I'm just thinking.
Anyway.
I'm just thinking of main events because there was a main event between that him cashing in and
yeah, that was last year, right? Because Ronda Rousey was there, made the appearance. That was just last year. So anyway,
really? Wow, doesn't seem like just last year.
I think so, right?
I'm trying to remember who. I'm gonna Google this while you.
All right. So anyway, what this book is doing is telling what happened between the shows, like the storyline, the parts of the story that you don't get to see because the way wrestling is structured is you see what happens on Wednesday, or I'm sorry, on Monday and on Tuesday on SmackDown and then Sunday at the pay-per-view when they do the pay-per-views. But you're really only seeing the slices of those days. So what this is doing is filling in the times in between. Seth Rollins turned his back on the team. You don't know why. Like you never saw how he was, you know, seduced to the dark side, why he turned. And so this book tells that story. This tells how he turned against them. This tells how he decided at WrestleMania to cash in the title and why it made Triple H kind of angry at him, which we saw play out in front of the camera in storylines, but we never really saw behind the scenes anything that really explained why it was happening. You knew there was a tension there, but you didn't really understand what it was. And this book is explaining all of that. So it's really fun in a sense of telling you the part of the story that you've never seen before. Even though you're familiar with the story, and at this point it's like a year old, it's still fun to see how it kind of fleshed out behind the scenes. So as a giant wrestling fan, I love this. This is not, though, for, you know, anyone who just got into wrestling this week or someone who's like, oh, I used to watch wrestling when I was a kid. I think I'll, you know, pick this up because I'd like to read comics. And it's not going to cross over like that. It's very much for a niche audience within wrestling fans, but I think it does a really good job of telling the story it sets out to tell. The artwork looks good. All the characters look like who they're supposed to look like. You know, it's a lot of fun in that regard too, as well.
So yes, there is two WrestleManias back because the first thing that comes up is, hold on. WrestleMania 32 was Roman Reigns versus Triple H. So it would be the one before that. So it would be 31 where Roman or Seth Rollins cashed in.
That was 31. Okay. Ah, dang it. Well, they use Roman numerals. It's so hard sometimes.
They make it difficult.
How do you do that, Vince? Why? So anyway, I thought it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did too. I wrote notes for it. I said, Dennis Hopeless has the wrestlers' voices down. He even Seth Rollins, heh, in there. And the visual art from Serge Acuna, he's got like the wrestler's mannerisms down, like Shawn Michaels, Triple H, you know, business suited up Triple H. I did say, why is Triple H eating a chicken leg before his WrestleMania match? Well, he's like, you know, got a sledgehammer and a chicken bone in his hand.
They do have catering back there, you know. They always have the fights on SmackDown.
Yeah. Yep.
But yeah, even like it's weird because even when they show the wrestling matches, like there's in ring when stuff is going on and they're fighting, you know, whatever, it's always like in the background of the dialogue. Like the action is not the most important thing that's going on there, as opposed to like when you're watching a wrestling show, you know, 70-80% of your show is the guys fighting and wrestling, and then you have the story that's, you know, lingering in between in order to tie everything together. Whereas this is doing the opposite. Like, this is not a book that you're going to read because you want to see these people fight. You see them fight all the time. you read this one because there's more story. There's added story elements to it that explain like what the characters are thinking and why they're doing what they're doing and why they turn against each other and why they team with people that should be their enemy. You know, why they make all those decisions. So, you know, like I said, in that regard, I think it's really well done. I think Dennis Hopeless? Yeah.
Yes.
He really thought outside the box. You know, it seems like one of those things where he had that flash of brilliance. Oh, I know how I could do this, and came up with a great idea instead of doing what they've always done before, where it's like, oh, Hulk Hogan is doing a charity car wash, and here comes Andre the Giant to get in his way, you know? So it's definitely better than that Mosaic book that came out this week. That book was terrible, and I don't know who would lower themselves to reading that book.
I would, whenever I finally, when I get to it.
Hey, Roddy, we're done.
Oh, what? Huh? Oh, yeah. Man, that sounds like a great book.
What are you reading there, Roddy?
Actually, I was kind of thumbing through Mosaic. Yes, interesting. It's a good book, even though I haven't read it. Pretty pictures. There's a Marvel MasterCard. Who knew? Anyway.
Well,
so you think it's going to... Okay, you think this is going to be something you're going to stick with?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yep.
It's better than that other wrestling book at Image.
Yeah, I was about to say, was it Slam? Was that one?
Ringside. No, Ringside, which
Ringside,
wrestling
yeah.
book is not about wrestling. It's just about out-of-work athletes doing shady deals in the background.
It's Southern Bastards, but for wrestling.
Wait, they're not the same?
They can be.
All right, moving right along. U.S. Avengers number 2.
The book I have not finished, but got halfway through before the show.
Oh, Tim.
It's that bad, huh?
No, it's not even that. How could it be bad? There is a couple of things going on here, it seems like. And in my notes, I have this, which is not exactly accurate, but whatever. I'm going with it. It seemed like a mix of Civil War 2.0, mixed with Ultimates, mixed with Age of Ultron. The way that what they're trying to set up. Because basically there's a 0-day thing. What's that? What are you about to say?
Oh, I had myself muted. I had a good line. I said two events I didn't like. Not winning me over.
Age of Ultron.
Age of Ultron. Civil War
II. That was I thought I was the only one who read that one, actually. But yeah, that one and the Civil War 2.0 tie-in was not what you think I would be thinking about on this one. But so basically... Daniel Cage, Captain America, comes back from the future because her enemy, Gold Skull, is plotting and scheming and is in pretty much doing the same thing that, a similar thing that ironically was going on in Spider-Gwen this week and, actually in Spider-Woman, actually, because he's pretty much coming over here plundering because, you know, there's nothing to plunder in their universe. He's getting around with, I guess, looks like Dr. Doomtech, what it looks like, and they make a reference to the time firewall that has been prevalent in Avengers, which, okay, I was like, okay, clearly that's a full-fledged thing then. So
is that what's also keeping the original X-Men from going back to their world?
And I didn't think about that until you just said that. So, yes, I would have guessed so. But apparently it didn't stop Gold Skull from getting to 616. And it didn't stop Cap from getting here. So she kind of recounts what's been going on with her, and she even makes a mention of that she is from a future, not 616, but one that could be, and that she's done time travel with. I mean, she has teamed up with other similar caps of her name and station, so that got put in there for whatever reason. And I guess 0-day is going to be so that was other things. So 0-day got brought up, which has to do with Thanos. Which apparently seems to be stopped by Secret War, from the if I'm reading that correct.
Or Civil War.
Civil War. No. Secret War. Oh, wait, no. You're right. I'm sorry. You're right. Because I'm thinking, because there was something else that made me think of Secret War, and that might not be this book. But you're right. Civil War, because, yeah, that was the
time. It was like a what-if moment where if Thanos wasn't stopped.
Right. If Thanos hadn't been stopped when he came into Civil War 2, then 0-day would have happened then.
Right.
So, but it also made me think, it was like, because at first I was thinking until I got to that point, I was thinking, it was like, wait a minute. So are they trying to say that 0-day was an event that got pushed for Civil War 2, which, you know, wouldn't be the first time an event got pushed, but apparently because of that, that's what brought on. That's what ended up not happening. So we got that. I suspect the Thanos thing was nothing but just to kind of bring up the point of all this other stuff that could happen or could have happened if that went on, you know, just kind of push this plot basically. Wait, why do I have iMessage? What the heck? Anyway, I don't think I did that. But reading my notes is a weird thing in there. I like how there's a slight Batman reference you could make out of this issue also, which I don't know if you got that far, Tim. I might be spoiling something from you. Did you say you're halfway through?
Yeah, about halfway.
Okay, so I'm not going to spoil it to you, but if you hadn't gotten to that moment yet, then I won't spoil it to you. I was like, okay, that was pretty good. But yeah, after that, it seems like they're setting up another, they could be setting up still another event coming out of this, but
I have a feeling they are.
Right? Yeah, that's what it looks like. And the Gold Skull is going to be either a catalyst or a little more prevalent in this universe than, like, they're pretty much trying to bring him over because we don't have, we do still have Red Skull. What am I talking about? So, I don't know. It's weird.
It's a good assumption that any Avengers book is leading to some type of Marvel event.
Yeah, probably. So, it was quite fun. It wasn't as action-packed as probably first issue one and, you know, the last run of New Avengers, but it was okay. It's going somewhere because at the end of the book, apparently, something's going to happen unless Bobby has a plan like he always does. So,
okay.
There was that. Anybody read Ultimates 2 number 3 since we're still on the Al Ewing?
Not yet.
Okay. I'll just go ahead and push this one off too because then I only got one more. But Ultimates 2 number 3, we have... Okay, shout out to Al Ewing, by the way, because, you know, speaking of multiversity type stuff, he's been one that's been out of anybody that's been, well, actually out of the stuff that kind of came out of Infinity that was never used. The universe stuff that kind of got brought in then was really not being used except for Starbrand and Nightmask. And I kept asking, like, when are they going to bring in some other stuff? And Al Ewing's been doing with that with Ultimates, because we have Philip Volt and his troubleshooters in this issue. We kind of go back into the past where he sees one of the men, he recruits one of the members who's apparently Justice or a version of Justice from the new universe. And it also seems like they set up the troubleshooters has been around for a while. If I read it correctly, it seems like around the time of Illuminati and not the last one, but the Tony Stark version, or more to point, not the last two versions, but I guess the original one or something, because they kind of make a mention of, like, Voight knowing about Tony Stark's starting up a private group of heavy hitters.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, that could only be... Because he mentioned the Avengers by name, but this other group he doesn't. So that could only be the Illuminati is what I'm thinking. So, and that was, like, years ago. And I can't even remember who started that. Was that Tony? I don't remember.
Not sure.
Either way, yeah. So either way... It seems to suggest that they've been around that long, even though we know Secret Wars happened and all of this kind of got blended in. So you see him, then it cuts to the present to where, you know, the troubleshooters and various mix of new universe characters are invading Blue Marvel's base because they're trying to find Ant-Man, who's off with Galactus, until Galactus fastball specialed him out of the way. Because order and chaos killed the Living Tribunal, and the old order changes because apparently at the end of the book they become a new being, and like I said, the team now knows of the team kind of knows of what's going on with Galactus because, like I said, Ant-Man finally made it back to the team, but at the same time they get attacked by the troubleshooters who are trying to take Anti-Man in. So we might see the Ultimates fighting these new troubleshooters. And we also get them trying to cement a little bit of the team a little bit, because there was a little discussion about why America Chavez is doing this, or rather the fact that America Chavez is leading the group and not Galactus, because apparently, you know, like Captain Marvel still kind of has beef with Galactus for some odd reason. So it's a good bit that happens. And the new universe ties are always cool with me. And being that this story is on a cosmic scale, this, you know, who knows what ramifications, just like you said earlier, Tim, it seemed like it could be setting up something major in an event somewhere along the line, but we don't know.
You want to get through your last two?
Last one, actually. Oh, wait, no, yeah, two. You're right. Let's see. I guess going from that, Mighty Captain Marvel number one. So there's really not much to say about this outside of the fact that she's in a different place than she was in Civil Wars 2, because it was a much better event than Civil War 2. No, actually, I stand by that. Secret Wars 2 was better than Civil War 2. Now, fight me on it. So she's kind of big time now. Apparently, because of things that happened in Civil War 2, in order for her to get funding, she has to do a TV, or she has to be a part of a TV show that they're making about her, since she's a public figure now, which is weird. But outside of that, you know, it's just a lot of her. The whole thing kind of read like a plot of a movie, because first you see them, her and you see her and Jessica Drew at this TV studio. Then something happens where they get called back to Alpha Flight. Or something about a kid in a refugee camp that's going on, because they have like a bunch of aliens coming in and out, which also again seemed like it might be starting up something, because there's mention of a whole bunch of refugees coming from other places, and the Chitauri are mentioned as driving people out of their off their planets and maybe trying to come here to Earth is being mentioned in this. But the focal point outside of that being some kid that got snatched, some Kree kid that specifically got snatched, and Captain Marvel goes after the perpetrators, and we see some other people plotting that look like Kree, but they're shapeshifters, so they could be Skrull starting another Kree Skrull world. We don't know, because they don't really change. They change shape, but they don't change back into their original shape, we don't think. But we know they're trying to do something, and it has something to do with kidnapping Kree kids. So, not sure. Like I said, it wasn't a bad read. It was just like, okay, that you could have. If this was like a big budget action movie, I feel like it probably could have read like one, or it probably could have been one out of some of this.
Okay.
Last one, Black Panther World of Wakanda number 3, which seemed to take place around the time of New Avengers 29 and from around Infinity. And I say that because in this story, Shuri's still queen and she's still alive. And it looks like part of the story kind of in the background kind of goes into leading up to that. But the bulk of it has to do with the Dora Milaje and two in particular, Ayo and Anika. And they're basically trying to get their relationship on track. But this is also during the face of before Black Panther number one, where they had already split off and become the Midnight Angels. So after this part, that they had already confronted T'Challa about all the other stuff he's been doing elsewhere and not being around for Wakanda, which caused them, the Dora Milaje, to be like, we're here for Wakanda, and all this other stuff you're doing is crazy, so we're going to split off and still be for Wakanda, but we're not for what you're trying to do. So there's still a little bit of, you know, turmoil in between that. But then, like I said, you have this other thing with the relationship between these other two Dora Milaje, who go off on a trip to New York for a minute to kind of get their minds right, whatever. But then they come back, end up coming back because Wakanda got attacked again, and this what seems to be still around the time of Infinity. So like I said, there's a couple of things going on in this, and it looks like at some point it's going to tie back into the current goings on in Black Panther proper, the Black Panther Prime book, but we're not there yet. Boom. That's all I got.
Okay, anything else, Doug?
Yeah, just two to do real quick. First is He-Man Thundercats number 4. Yay!
Oh yeah, didn't read that this week.
This book is so goofy and crazy. I love it. A lot of people hate this book. I do two Masters of the Universe podcasts, produce them for Pop Culture Network. And on both of those shows, they hate this book. Everybody hates this book because it plays fast and loose with the mythos of the Thundercats and of Masters of the Universe. Like, it's not true to either one 100%. That way it can do kind of its own thing and play with some things a bit. But everything that they hate is kind of the stuff that I love. So, like, for instance, in this particular issue, Lion-O uses the Sword of Omens to give Battle Cat powers. And so Battle Cat becomes like a hybrid Thundercats guy. So he's like standing up. He looks like a Thundercat. Like, he's standing up. He's covered in the green fur. His orange patches have like the Thundercat symbol on his chest, but he's still wearing his Battle Cat helmet. And he's going nuts, attacking all the bad guys. And like, it's that kind of goofy stuff that everybody's like, oh, I hate that. And I'm like, this is great. Like, this is the most awesome thing I've seen in a long time.
Okay, I have to read this.
last issue, Mum-Ra and Skeletor got into a fight with each other, and they started calling each other jackass. And, you bony dope or something like that, you know, and everyone's like, oh, this dialogue is so terrible. I'm like, I love this. Like, this is the best dialogue in the history of mankind. So He-Man Thundercats, if you are way overprotective of your 80s properties, you're probably going to hate it. But if you want to have some fun, it's actually a really good book. And then the last book I'll talk about here, is Squadron Supreme 15. And this is indeed the final issue. Yeah, they kind of teased it in the solicits, but the solicits never actually said final issue. It just said something like, find out in this amazing epic issue. And you're like, epic? You mean epic final issue? Yeah, well, that's what it turns out. That's what it is. They just didn't.
No wonder James Robinson has time to write whatever, a Cable ongoing series and Nick Fury ongoing series in the future.
Yeah, because two of his books are ending at 15, because Scarlet Witch is ending in the next month or two.
So basically, this book, the team basically can't work together anymore. Hyperion and Nighthawk are just not, they just can't work together. They have too many different ideas of what needs to be done and how to be heroes and how to fight. And they're just not going to be able to see eye to eye anymore. So this is the final breakdown of the team. But it really, what really stands out in this book is that this book really sets up Defenders. The last few issues, and especially this issue in particular, it's more about Namor and Jim Hammond than really about the Squadron. I mean, they're definitely there, but Jim Hammond's powers have changed because of this book. Namor died and was brought back to life because of this book. So it has much more of a Defenders tie-in really here at the end than being a Squadron Supreme thing, other than to bring the whole team together, just to tear them apart. So if you're looking for some info on Namor and Jim Hammond, you get some neat stuff in this final issue. But I mean, as far as like Marvel had their chance to be like, hey, what if we took analogs of the Justice League and put them in the Marvel universe? And that's kind of how it started. And then they went to Weird World and it all just kind of fell apart, never quite came back together after that. So it definitely, it tried early on, I think, but it just didn't, the fun didn't last very long, and the book is finally finished. So, and because they gave Hyperion and Nighthawk individual series, and neither one of those lasted, I think we're pretty much done with these characters for a while. One of them does join S.H.I.E.L.D., so you may see that character appear, you know, elsewhere in the Marvel Universe just because of the S.H.I.E.L.D. tie-in, but I think the rest of these guys are Nighthawk's appearing in Occupy Avengers, but... Mm-hmm. Whether or not he lasts there, though, is another question.
Yeah, they tried with these characters coming out of Secret Wars.
Well, and the thing was, they very easily could have just said, hey, this is Marvel's Justice League. Let's tell some Justice League stories, but do it the Marvel way. And instead, they were like, no, that's what everybody expects. So let's do something completely different.
And they were like on the fringe, and they were like investigating alien invaders, if I remember. For time and
yeah, and then they went off into Weird World and fought the evil wizard.
I feel like Weird World is another one of those. You know, this is going to be important going forward in the Marvel Universe, and like every series that's tied to it has been canceled.
It's the touch of death.
Mm. There was a Weird World ongoing series that ended, and then Black Knight was based in Weird World. It barely made the 6 issues, I think. They visited, yeah, as you said.
Monsters, they should put the Monsters Unleashed in Weird World because it seems like it would fit.
It is. Like, Weird World, I feel like, is another one of those things. It's like of them trying to set up something for the movies. But that's just my conspiracy theorist mind working.
Well, that's what they wanted to do for Doctor Strange, but they realized they had to do it in Doctor Strange 2.
Yeah. I could actually see that happening. I was going to ask, how did Namor get resurrected?
They used basically a combination of science and magic, if I remember correctly, and they go back in time, and they basically like steal his soul the moment before he dies, and they're able to use that to resurrect him in the flesh in the real world. And so they pull him out, and he doesn't want anything to do with them, obviously, because he knows, like, hey, you guys are like ready to kill me. I should, you know, destroy you, and you destroyed Atlantis, and blah, 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 blah. And they have to explain to him, like, okay, we're from the future. Killing you was a mistake. We need you back. You have a role in, you know, whatever, blah, 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 blah. And so then Namor decides to come back. And that's...
I'm sorry I asked.
Yeah. It was... Horrible. You remember when Captain America died?
Yeah.
And he was dead for real. And so they did the thing where they, like, traveled through time and did some weird thing to pull a slice of him from the past and bring it to the future. It was like that same mistake of a story being redone here with Namor.
Wait, is that what happened? I blanked all of that out.
Remember
I just remember it involved time travel because it's the same thing that happened with Batman.
Yeah, because it was one of those things where it came out and people bought it. It's like, what happened? I gave up after the second issue, but I bought them all because I wanted the collection, and he's back and who cares? And that was pretty much the end of that.
Matt Wang says the underrated Frank Thierry Black Knight series was around for 5 issues. I said sit, so.
You gave it more credit.
I did. I remember it got ended quickly.
Yeah. And it wasn't bad. Like, it was a fine series, but, I mean, if you don't care about Weird World, you're not going to care about Black Knight or in Weird World, you know?
As if you care about Black Knight in this world.
Yeah.
It was fun for what it was, for him, like, being driven mad and taking control of this, you know, magical universe, whatever, but... Yeah, it just, I don't know. Never really had a chance.
All right.
Anybody else got anything?
Tap
done.
Right, Clicks of the week.
Well, okay, mine actually, I wasn't really sure before we started, but talking about the books made it pretty clear to me that Superman 15, I actually loved a lot. The multiple universes, the seeing the Supermans from all, the Supermans from all over. That to me is just always a good time. So I really enjoyed this a lot.
So you called your shot before you were even sure. That's pretty good.
You never know.
I bet.
Yeah.
Also, to piggyback on Dirt's thought process, I think talking about the books helped me decide, because I came into the show with, like, I know there's 4 I liked a lot, but I'm going to go with the WWE number 1.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All right.
There we go.
I'm going to go with, even though I did like Trinity, I think I'm going to go with Invincible Iron Man number 3.
That was one of my final 4 as well. Yeah. It's a good choice.
Thank you.
I will allow this, says Tim.
I'm assuming no one has the ad reads pulled up.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't think of that.
Buy stuff at Busted Tees. They have great tees. Go to CSPN.
See if I can bring it up on my phone.
And click on the Busted Tees link, and then you can find great tees, like pretty, pretty good. and there's something with Doctor Who. And Samuel L. Jackson as emojis.
Let's go with Audible.
Please. Stop.
Yeah, because you just called one, right?
For you, the listeners of the Comic Book Chronicles podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their site. Check out books such as The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea by Chris Jericho, King of New Orleans, How the Junkyard Dog Became Professional Wrestling's First Black Superhero by Greg Klein, and Jurassic Park 25th Anniversary Edition by Michael Crichton. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/comicbookchronicles. Again, that's audibletrial.com/comicbookchronicles for your free audiobook. Cha-ching! All right.
That was like an assault rifle of cash registers that came out of nowhere.
So let me scroll down to the news section now.
Scroll.
All right, cinematic news. Deadpool 2 will bring back some of the Mert with the Mouse buddies.
Yep, everybody you think of.
Colossus, Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
And Dopinder.
Dopinder?
Yep.
Deadpool launches Oscars campaign with hilarious for your consideration ad. Scroll. Deadpool 2 writers on adding more mutants and land the X-Force Foundation. Patton Oswalt returns to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. possibly connected to Luke Cage.
Yeah, so apparently if you haven't seen this week's episode, something that happened that seems like that people are taking as a callback to Luke Cage.
Don't call it a comeback.
I can see it. Not it's been put out there, but it wasn't called by name or anything. So,
Lucasfilm statement: we will not digitally recreate Carrie Fisher as Princess or General Leia.
Yep, and I think the last of our stuff is going to be in Episode 8.
Star Wars: Diego Luna plays coy about Cassian Andor's return.
Which at first seems weird considering how that movie ends out, but basically it's talking about he could show up in like a Han Solo movie or, you know, something like that, which I guess, sure.
I guess there's Rebels he could appear in.
Well, there's also that, yeah.
Peter Dinklage in talks to join the next two Avengers movies. It's got people talking.
Sure, and it'll probably happen if that other thing with Woody Harrelson happened, or since.
Woody Harrelson.
He's confirmed to be in the Han Solo movie, which granted is not Marvel, but I'm just saying it's the same thing. Like people were saying that, hey, he might be in this, but.
Robbie Amell is returning to The Flash as Ronnie Raymond.
Not sure why, but okay.
Why not? I still understand Firestorm, but.
Well, that's the thing, because they've been different pairings, so they're probably going to be, I'm assuming they're going to do that.
X-Men Supernova confirmed as Dark Phoenix movie. X-Men TV spinoff about mutant kids and their parents near his pilot order at Fox.
Which is a weird phrasing considering we know that, you know, they were trying to do something with New Mutants. But I think that's
not a movie.
Right. So what this is, the speculation.
If I just be normal kids that and watch their everyday lives interact and trying to live their lives with these powers that they can't control.
So it's Generation X again?
Sounds like it.
Save the cheerleader, save the world.
Oh, God.
TV's Jughead won't be canon. We'll want sets. What?
It's a CW show. Yeah, so Jughead in the comics right now, in the current comics, is asexual.
Ah.
So, you know, which technically you could say he always was, but, you know, whatever. He liked hamburgers more than...
He had a girlfriend.
Well, Big Ethel wanted him as a boyfriend, but she technically was not. He was just always chasing that. Well, I guess that was that one time, so I guess you're right. But unless it was another time that I'm not thinking about. Either way, you know, it's a CW show, and he's going to be sexing, or trying to sex.
So they're going to turn him into, like, some sort of hornball?
They didn't necessarily go that far, but, you know, I don't know.
Like Zach from Saved by the Bell picking up all the ladies?
Well, technically, that's Archie, though. So, and which is weird.
Yeah, but this is the CW, so now it's Jughead.
That's also true, too.
Because Archie has to be dark and twisted and paint his fingernails black. So, Jughead's the one that's always out there getting the ladies.
Perhaps. Take him out for a burger and coffee. Quink, quink. But, and the guy who plays Archie was the one who was like, they should keep Jughead asexual, like, whatever. But the higher-ups didn't go for it.
Miles Morales is confirmed as the lead in the animated Spider-Man film.
Yay!
And while there's confirmations going on, Karen Gillan confirms she's going to be in Avengers Infinity War.
Sure.
Marvel found a director for the Inhumans IMAX episodes. There were new trailers today for Logan and Power Rangers.
Yes, there was. The Logan one actually is kind of looks not bad, actually.
About the Logan movie.
Mm. Power Rangers. It makes me want to watch it, but I still don't think I'm going to the movies for it.
I mean, I'll go just because it's a comic book movie that I'm somewhat interested in.
Sucker.
Yeah.
I was like, I have my limits. It's not going to be. No, I can wait for a video on that one. And as far as the Power Rangers ones, like we get to see Zords and Zordon and a weird looking Alpha 5 with a different voice. So
hopefully something coming out tomorrow related to the Power Rangers trailer, so stay tuned for that. Shazam and Black Adam will be two different movies, or they'll be in two different movies, because Black Adam's moving up to big time.
Yeah. can't have The Rock, you know, playing a side character in somebody else's movie. You got to give him some shine.
I've been saying this since when they first announced it. I guess it was 2008 or whenever it was.
Yeah.
It was like, yay, we're going to do a Shazam movie, and The Rock chose to be Black Adam. It's like, okay, so you knew you got to have someone that can stand up toe-to-toe with The Rock as far as, like, personality and being a larger-than-life personality, right?
So
and then they pushed it off, like, a decade late. They announced the movie for, like, a decade after the announcement, which never made sense. It's like you're just waiting for The Rock to get older and older. Well, if he got hit by a bus, you'd be out of luck.
Oh, jeez, Tim.
These are things you got to think about.
Do you have to?
I guess you don't have to. And you got your first look at the DC's long-awaited Teen Titans and Judas Contract animated movie. Did they show, like, video footage of it, or just those still photos I saw?
I think it was just stills.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember seeing any video on it.
Let's see. Get down to some comic book news. Editor Ellie Powell left DC Comics, actually Vertigo is where she was working at, to go work at, I'm going off memory, some video game company or something.
She's going to Riot Games because they, the makers of League of Legends, they also have a comic book imprint based off of the game. So I think that's what she's over there for.
Superman is getting a new outfit.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Yeah, there we go. There were some Secret Empire teasers from Marvel for something Captain America related. They haven't actually announced what it is. So
I feel like they don't. I feel like they're making a little bit more out of it than what it is, and maybe just me just thinking there's not as much as what they're.
I mean, they haven't announced what it's for yet. So
right,
this but is I like mean, a typical but, teaser leak. Right, so
right, but they're basically all. If you look at all the teasers, they pretty much tie in a character with a book already established. And I'm like, okay, well, these could be all of the people that's, you know,
because if you haven't had enough events. If you haven't had enough events in your Marvel life in 2017 with Marvel's Monsters Unleashed and Inhumans versus X-Men, get ready for Secret Empire this spring/summer. It'll be summer, probably. That'll be the big summer event.
Oh, it's not. Breaking news. Apparently Miguel Ferrer died.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, that broke several hours ago.
I saw people talking about him, but I wasn't sure why. I didn't know if that was... that's it.
Rest in peace.
Yes.
DC's screwing with Marvel by giving fans what they want in digital comics. So the monthly shipping titles are going to go up in price by $1 to $3.99.
And they're getting digital codes.
The double shipping books stay at $2.99, but they also get the digital code, right?
No.
Yeah, I read something today saying that they added that.
It would have been nice if they did, but they did say, but the next article goes into the fact that the digital versions of those $2.99 books are staying the same.
I read that today. We go to popular rumored news site to see if they had something up about that.
All right, so the way I understood the press release that they sent to us was that the monthly books that are currently $2.99 will jump to $3.99 in print, but they will come with a code for the digital copy, just like Marvel has now, that Marvel is going to be abandoning at the end of the month. Right. So DC is basically going to that $3.99 price point, but adding the digital code. But the regular bi-monthly books will continue to be $2.99 and will not have the digital code. The more expensive books, like All-Star Batman, which is a $4.99, will stay at $4.99, but it will also include a digital code. So basically anything that's $3.99 and up will include a digital code for that book. But if you just buy the digital copy and you don't buy the print, it'll actually be staying at that $2.99 price point. So right, it's actually cheaper to buy the digital than to buy the print, but if you buy the print, you get the copy of the digital.
And chances are, if you're buying the print, you will probably want the digital because that way you don't have to read the physical. You can just sock that away and use the digital.
Right.
Like I deal with Marvel stuff, or was doing.
So even All-Star... Well, even the monthly shipping books are staying at $2.99.
No, monthly is just $3.99.
I'm not saying the digital version.
The digitals that are is there anything that's $3.99 now?
I'm saying I'm gonna use All Star Batman because that's a
like Cyborg.
Yes,
Cyborg is a $2.99 book.
Right.
It will become a $3.99 book in print. But if you buy the $3.99 print book, you get a code for the digital copy. If you just buy it digitally, it'll be $2.99.
That's okay. That's what I've wondered.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay.
All right.
I still wish they would have gone across the board with it, but I guess I see why they're not right now. Maybe those, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah,
I don't want to see everything go up too high in price.
Well, true. But I mean, but if they're throwing digital codes on the books, that would, you know, kind of be almost.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah,
If they were, but at the same time, but see, cause, but then again, at the same time, if they did do it across the board and they left the digital the same price, then that would be like people would be like, well, what's the point of me getting print if I don't know?
Because because you have that problem with retailers, because if you say digital is always going to be cheaper than print, people will buy digital. Exactly. There are people. In fact, I was talking our store. We've actually increased the amount of traffic that we have since Rebirth. We had a little bit more with New 52. We had more with Secret Wars. Civil War started to bring people in, but, I mean, let's face it, Civil War was Civil War. But Rebirth has actually brought more people to our store. And when they lowered the price to $2.99 and shipped twice a month, it's a lower profit margin you get on a $2.99 book than a $3.99 book because it's, I mean, it's obviously there's a dollar difference. So you make, you know, less profit on it. But because we had more people coming into the store and buying the books, we actually made more money on smaller profit because we had more traffic. Now, there are three comic book stores here in our town of 100,000 people. And so I talked to the owners of the other stores. Like, we all get along. I worked with one of the other guys who runs another store. We worked at a store together for a while. So, like, we all get along and talk to each other. But I was talking to one of the other store owners, and he said for his store, when DC went day and date in 2011, he actually lost a fair amount of customers because a fair amount of his customers were willing to just buy digital and didn't care about the print copies anymore. So for them, it was a matter of convenience. And they said, well, hey, as long as I can get this on my iPad, I don't care. And they stopped coming in and buying the print copies. He was worried with the digital going into the print copies that if the prices – with the prices going cheaper, with it being $2.99 digital versus $3.99 print, he's worried that he's going to lose a few more customers because they'll say, well, it's a dollar cheaper if I buy it online. I'll just buy it online. Because we're finding, you know, as we go more and more into the world of collecting comics, your back issues don't really have a lot of value anymore. They had a lot more value 10, 20, depending on how old you are, 30 years ago when you bought them. They had more value because there weren't as many that were being kept in good condition to resell them. You know, a lot of kids would buy them, they would read them, they would sit on them, they'd throw them in their backpack, covers would get ripped off. You know, they didn't really care, so it didn't really matter. But as comics went through the 90s and became, you know, super high collectibles, then you had the implosion in the early 2000s. You know, now people just don't really worry about back issues. It's not that big of a deal. If they can buy them digitally, you know, 99 cents, $1.99, they'd rather buy them there than pay $3 to walk in the store and buy a physical copy, you know, unless they want it for some particular reason. So he's really worried about his store because he lost customers before, and he's afraid that this move is going to lose some customers. Whereas us, we're more – like he's in a small building kind of set back away from the road. People go – he's a destination for people, whereas our store is in a strip mall. We also have toys, and we have video games, and we have movies.
But that's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, right. We have a lot more random people that come in.
We
moved into our building in the beginning of 2014, and we still have people walk in going, oh, I didn't know this place was here. You know, it's like, oh, I was walking by, and I thought I'd stop in, you know, whatever. So, you know, we still get that all the time at our store. So our base grows, but it grows from outside the world of comics, whereas his is much more of just people come there to buy comics and they leave. There's nothing else that's going on. So he's really worried. So I think if they were to do that across the board and say every single book is now going to be a dollar more expensive if you buy it in print, it's technically a dollar cheaper if you buy digital, stores like him, they'd put him out of business because there'd be no reason for people to come in anymore. So you do have these market issues. You know, store like us, it doesn't really matter. Store like his, it's going to be a big deal. So they have to be careful when they do some of these things and how they play it.
And that your explanation kind of reminded me of that C2E2 conversation we had off channel two. But anyway.
No. Anyway.
Yeah.
let's see. DC's top secret free comic book day titles were revealed. Wonder Woman special edition and DC Superhero Girls special edition are the two selections.
It's the year of the girls.
Yep. Injustice 2 trailer dropped.
No. They're basically it was an article saying that there was a trailer, but I think that was a few days ago. But there was something basically saying that hey, there's a special edition coming out with some extra characters, but they just not somewhat different than what they have done in the past. Like they have characters that are going to be coming with the game, then they're going to have DLC characters that you can buy later on or come in packs later on, and they just announced a couple of them that's going to be in whatever special edition pack.
But the trailer only dropped like what, 2 days ago?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That was a couple of days ago. So, but I don't think that was a part of this. So,
oh, Future Crest is ending.
Either way. Oh, by the way, there's a beta for Injustice 2. There's a site if you want to go check it out, beta.injustice.com for PS4 and Xbox One. Maybe you can get a key and try it online.
I'll do that after the show. Yeah. So, okay, Future Crest apparently isn't canceled.
Yeah. It apparently did not. So yeah, 12 issues were supposed to be it, according to the solicits. But Jeff Parker came out on Twitter and said, that might not be it. And be patient because we might have some more news. Or yeah, it's not over when we thought it was over.
Marvel publisher Dan Buckley named Marvel Entertainment president. Gets a raise. I wonder who's going to take over as publisher, I guess. Was his previous
Stanley.
Role. Yeah, I don't think it says in that article, but...
DC Superhero Girls goes back in time and offers free digital chapters of past times at Superhero High.
Hey, dude, nice part. Oh, wait, that's not the right one. So, yeah, you can. There's a code, pastime 2017, all caps, one word. And if you go and redeem that at readadcentertainment.com/redeem, you can get 2 free issues. What's you probably code? Did that at Comixology, too, because, I mean, they're using Comixology for their digital... So I can imagine you probably do it straight there.
What'd you say it was?
Read DC.
The code.
Oh, past times 2017. All one word. Past
times 2017. Okay.
And we found out the identity of the new Mighty Morphin Power Ranger from the comic series. And there's a new update to Marvel Heroes.
Yep. Just dropped tonight, and they have changed a good bit of things. And it's a free-to-play game. Go check it out if you like Marvel Heroes and or a Diablo-like game. Yeah. The Mac client.
All right. Last ad read for tonight for Amazon. Visit cspn.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, etc. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps keep the Comic Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through CSPN.us. Do it today. Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching.
Would help if I wasn't muted.
Yeah, that does help.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at CBCron. Cha-ching.
Whoops.
Radicat is at Radicat and at News Nerds Need.
And Instagram, CB Caps. And
there you go.
And Snapchat, Radicat, if you want to. I don't know. Actually, what I've been doing on Snapchat is every new comic book day, I put something up.
I forgot to do that.
And then I put it out on YouTube afterwards. So it's probably on my YouTube page also.
There you go. And Doug is at PCN_dirt and on Instagram at Graham Comic Reviews. And go to popculturenetwork.com.
And watch the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers trailer.
Do all the things.
Yeah.
And our sick man at home is at agent_70 on Twitter and Instagram.
Give him a follow. He's at home. He could be on secret mission and just told us he was sick.
And with that, we'll be back next week, 9 p.m. ish Eastern time. Go to theclicknation.com/live to always watch. And we are the Comic Chronicles, and we are signing off.